cancer cells are mutants. They divide without stopping, they invade the body, they resist the normal processes, and they do whatever they want. And that kind of power is scary. Top it off with a pandemic, and cancer patients bear an incredible burden. And we're talking about it this hour of the morning show. I'm Keeley Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. And you're part of this conversation. You can call 800-642-1234. Let us know how this is affecting your life. Are you involved in cancer treatment right now? How has it been figuring out what your treatment should look like in a global pandemic? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're starting by talking about physical medical treatment for cancer with Dr. Beth Erickson. She's a radiation oncologist and researcher with Froedtert Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin Network. Dr. Erickson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How has your work as an oncologist changed during the pandemic?
Well, I think it has changed for everybody. And, you know, when we're dealing with cancer patients, we have to be especially careful because some of them may be more susceptible to infections, and bringing them to the hospital could potentially be a problem with COVID.
Well, after COVID-19, you know, really reached the U.S., it was obvious that it was a problem for us. How did people start trying to figure out if they were cancer patients to continue in-person treatment or if the risks were too high?
Well, I think that's where the Froedtert Hospital really went into action to try to make our facility as safe as possible for patients to come and be evaluated for their cancer treatment, and therefore feeling like their cancer was not put on hold. In the Department of Radiation Oncology, for example, we were very, very committed to being here for our patients and have an army of healthcare professionals who were here to take care of patients with active cancer diagnoses.
Did you hear from patients that were concerned about trying to figure out, do I treat my cancer right now or do I stay home?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where some degree of screening was at play. Certainly, there are some patients who might feel uncomfortable, who had slow-growing cancers, who perhaps could delay their treatment for a while. But others, obviously, are very, very anxious to get started with their treatment and not let anything get in the way of their cancer receiving the proper treatment.
So the speed at which a certain person's cancer moves is one element of it. Does stage matter? We often talk about stages of cancer. That's familiar to people.
Oh, absolutely. And the stage of a patient's cancer obviously determines the treatment, whether they'll need surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, or a combination of all of those, and what the best sequencing should be. So all of that is taken into account by the cancer care team, which is composed of medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, and surgical oncologists.
So it's you're not just relying on one person's expertise either. You have a panel of people looking out for you, trying to figure out what's best for you based on your particular cancer.
Oh, absolutely. And this happens routinely at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, where we have teams of site-specific experts who look at all of the tests that are done with diagnosis of cancer, evaluate the patient, and then make a plan that is patient-specific.
Are there cancer treatments that you're postponing at this point, or have things kind of returned to a more normal schedule?
Yeah, I would say initially there were some considerations for postponing treatment, perhaps of some cancers that were perhaps more slow-growing. Example of that might be an early stage prostate cancer patient who might be able to go on hormones first rather than coming into the hospital to get radiation. But I have to say that's all largely transitioned back to normal care for all patients with cancer. And to do that, we make our facility a very safe facility for patients to come. There's all kinds of things that are in place to assure that patients are entering a very, very safe environment.
Dr. Beth Erickson is a radiation oncologist who works in Milwaukee, and we're taking your calls as we talk about cancer in a pandemic this hour. 800-642-1234 is the number you can use. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Are you a medical professional who works with cancer patients? How are your facilities handling this? Maybe you've delayed getting screened for cancer because you're just not sure you want to go someplace during a pandemic. Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. Dr. Erickson, you just talked about needing to make sure that facilities are safe. What are some of those protocols that hospitals have instituted to protect cancer patients?
Things that is in place is that patients are greeted at the door and screened. If they don't have a mask, they're provided a mask. Everybody at Frederick and all of Frederick's facilities wears a mask all the time. Visitors, patients, patients and visitors before, even the day before they come, when we have patients who are scheduled, they're called, we screen for symptoms that might be suggestive of COVID. If there are concerning symptoms, we ask for them to be tested. The cleaning that goes on inside of the building is another facet of this that makes it safe. Lots of cleaning of surfaces, rooms, anything that people would touch, all of that is cleaned between before the day starts and between patients. All of us as health caregivers are washing and disinfecting our hands constantly. So lots of things are done to make the environment safe. And patients who are COVID positive, proven COVID positive, are treated in different parts of the building, infusion areas. Obviously, there's the inpatient side, which is very, very carefully regulated relative to those with active infection.
So you've had cancer patients using your facilities that have been diagnosed with COVID-19?
Yes, and they are very, very carefully cared for, obviously in areas where other patients are not. And the inpatient side is where most of that is going on, but selectively in the outpatient setting where they will get cared for in special, example, infusion areas.
Sure, just to minimize their interaction with others and to minimize the opportunity to put other people at risk.
Correct. Yet we also have to understand that if they have cancer, they need that treated. So those things have to be very carefully balanced.
How do you explain that to a patient who's worried?
Number one, we assure them that they're in a place where the health caregivers are all committed to being there for them. Even at the height of uncertainty where we weren't sure, you know, who was supposed to be at work, who wasn't, we had an army of committed healthcare professionals here who did everything they needed to do to be safe but present for our cancer patients so that they wouldn't feel abandoned. And once they know they're coming into a safe environment, I think they relax and they know that their cancer is going to get the best care possible.
We're talking with Dr. Beth Erickson, who is a radiation oncologist, and we're discussing how cancer treatment has changed or hasn't changed right now as we're dealing with COVID-19 that is, you know, in the same hospitals where cancer patients are going. So we're learning what makes sense, what changes have happened, how hospital systems and medical professionals are protecting people from COVID-19, especially those who are undergoing treatment for cancer. And there's room for you to share your experience with us as we talk about cancer this hour. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Maybe you're a cancer patient and you've done some in-person treatment. Maybe you've received telehealth services and used the internet. How effective has that been for you? What is your experience? Share with us at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to this conversation on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. When it became obvious COVID-19 was a massive public health issue, hospitals and clinics clamped down. They encouraged only critical care, and that means people canceled appointments they figured could wait. But now doctors are worried that opting out of routine screenings means more people will have cancer longer before they can diagnose it and start treatment. We're talking about cancer this hour. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, and there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Maybe you work in a hospital. What are you seeing as far as treatment for cancer patients amid the COVID-19 pandemic? Maybe you have a cancer diagnosis and you've been receiving treatment during the pandemic. Maybe you've opted to wait. Tell us your story. Help us understand. 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Beth Erickson works in oncology and researches radiation therapy. And Dr. Erickson, the National Cancer Institute, predicts that in the next decade, excess cancer deaths will top 10,000 because of missed screenings and delays in diagnosis during the pandemic. I mean, 10,000. I don't even know what question to ask about that, because it's such a striking number that 10,000 people are likely to die because we've missed cancer right now.
Yeah, it's an incredible number. And I think that's where patients need to keep in touch with their primary care physician if they don't have a cancer diagnosis. A lot of clinics now are ramping up and doing routine things such as mammograms, colonoscopies, blood tests such as PSA, physical exams. All of that is largely, I think, returning to normal in many clinics so that cancers aren't missed. But patients also have to be proactive to seek care and not just stay away from medical care out of fear.
Yeah, I think that's easier said than done sometimes when you look at the different information that we've got. Are there ways that clinics are trying to, take a more passive approach in the beginning? Are there things that we can do that don't require as much time in clinics when we're going through screenings or checks that we can opt for first before what we would traditionally do if we didn't have an infectious disease spreading?
Well, absolutely. And one of these has been the emergence of more telehealth or virtual visits. Frederick and the Medical College have been out front in trying to make this available to patients. And this can be anywhere from a phone call with your physician to actually being on screen with your physician or a group of physicians for routine health care or even for cancer care.
How does telehealth or digital health work when it comes to cancer, though? Because I think I inherently understand how if my kid has pink eye, I can put them on a video screen with the doctor and they can confirm and write a prescription for it. But cancer is just so different than an obvious malady.
Well, at some point in time, obviously, we need to see people and we need to examine them. But sometimes it's helpful when people are contemplating whether they should even come to the medical center to have a visit online. And we've done this with a number of new consult patients who maybe are a bit elderly or frail, and we'll get online. We'll obviously review their record before we're online with them and then go through a history. We can put together a lot of what needs to be in that medical record through the telehealth visit. If it appears that the patient would be a good candidate for treatment, whether that might be surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, we can then schedule the in-person visit with a family member with them to complete the rest of the evaluation. And it's just a very kind of a good way to get people in front of us and yet not in the clinic where they may fear some exposure, although the risk of exposure here is extremely low.
Sure. And still, you're making sure that instead of filling out a history and going through all of that as maybe we used to in the clinic setting, we can do that in advance so then we're in the clinic for a shorter amount of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it seems to be just a well-received option for patients, and I think has allowed them to access care very efficiently and safely.
Dr. Beth Erickson is talking with us. She's a radiation oncologist at Frederick Hospital in Milwaukee. And there's a line for you if you'd like to share your experience with cancer or with someone in your family, or maybe you work in the medical field. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 to share your story with us. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Erickson, with your experience in radiation, part of cancer treatment can sometimes involve radiation therapy, not all the time, but patients do experience radiation therapy. And how does that work? How often do we see it used to treat cancer?
Well, it's used for almost all cancers, and I would say at least 50 to 60% of all cancer patients will receive radiation at some point in time. We use this sometimes as the sole treatment for cancer, but more often it's combined with other treatments such as surgery, chemotherapy. Sometimes it's used before surgery to enable the surgeon to have clear margins, reduce the chance of the cancer coming back where they're operating. Sometimes it's used after surgery when there are high-risk features on the pathology report that would make a patient susceptible to cancer return. And sometimes it's used for palliation. Patients with painful metastases from cancer or those who are too frail to have any other treatment may be able to have some of their symptoms addressed with local radiation. So it has wide and diverse use.
What research are you doing to provide safer, more effective radiation therapy?
Well, one of the newest acquisitions is a machine that we call the MR-Linac. And instead of having a CT scanner built into the radiation delivery machine, an MRI scanner is built into that machine. And what that allows is to actually be able to see the tumor while we're treating it and also see the organs that live around the tumor where we want to reduce dose. And we can do that not only at the beginning of treatment, like we do with CT scanning, but during the entire treatment delivery. The tumor is visible, as are those normal organs, and we can adapt the radiation plan to the specifics of each case. So it's really a revolutionary addition to our tools to fight cancer.
Talk more about what it looks like to change or adapt treatment as you're moving forward with it.
Well, one of the things that is required is that patients may need to be on the radiation delivery table a little bit longer. So we like to select patients, number one, who aren't claustrophobic. Some patients are adverse to MR scans because it's a little bit more enclosed when you're having the scan done. And they also have to be able to lay on the table and have us do the necessary adaption and treatment delivery, which takes a bit longer.
All right. As we continue trying to better understand COVID-19 and figure out how to mitigate risks, what concerns do you still hear from your patients?
Well, I think there's so much that is not known yet about the virus. And I think that's where we're all looking to researchers in infectious disease to provide that information to us. You know, some of the patients who've had COVID are wondering, well, when are they, you know, free of their infection? When is it safe for them maybe to return and be treated for cancer? That's a common concern. And I think just the more we begin to know about COVID, the more we can be helpful to our patients in guiding them through a cancer diagnosis.
What do you worry about?
Well, I think we all worry about infection. And I guess as a healthcare professional, what I want to make sure every day is that I'm not carrying the virus and giving it to my patients. And right now, the best defense against that is everything that we're doing, washing hands, wearing masks, limiting. We all have a personal responsibility to limit our exposure to people who may be COVID positive in the community. So that might mean curtailing some of our social events, Not attending things sometimes as important as weddings or big gatherings, just being responsible. And every day that I walk into the hospital, I want to make sure that I am a benefit to my patients rather than a risk. And it's a common concern among health caregivers that we stay safe so that we can be here for our patients.
Dr. Erickson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Beth Erickson is a radiation oncologist and a researcher with Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Network. Our conversation about cancer continues this hour of the morning show. We're going to talk about how cancer patients and their families can cope with such serious illness with the added stresses of COVID-19, some of the isolation that comes with trying to keep ourselves and patients and medical providers safe. We're taking your calls, your stories. Welcome at 800-642-1234. Have you been recently diagnosed with cancer? Maybe you know someone who's going through cancer treatments right now. What's your experience been? Perhaps you're part of a cancer support group. How have gatherings changed? How are you staying connected to other people to make sure that you have enough support? 800-642-1234. You can call now. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. News is next. I'm Keely Boltina. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention. We bring you the mix of live and virtual events planned as delegates are expected to confirm Donald Trump as the party's candidate for president. That's tonight through Thursday night, starting at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. Thanks for being with us here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. This hour, our conversation focuses on cancer. We've learned from a doctor about changes in protocols during a pandemic, so we better understand physical treatment for these diseases. Now we're talking about mental health as we go through and support people living with cancer during a global health crisis. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about how to support people going through cancer treatment? Maybe you're experiencing it yourself and want to share your story. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Our guest joins us to talk about mental and emotional support in cancer. Tom Beckers is a Green Bay oncology social worker at the Hospital Sisters Health System, St. Vincent Hospital Cancer Centers. Thomas, thank you for talking with us today.
Good morning, Keely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Certainly. What is the role of an oncology social worker? What do you do every day?
We're kind of at the front lines of being able to offer support for both the patients themselves and their loved ones right from diagnosis, when they're dealing with the initial reactions to a diagnosis, whether it be shock, anger, disbelief, all kinds of emotions that go along with the diagnosis, helping them through the whole process. With whatever treatments they're getting, to help at times, say there may be a setback or a recurrence of the cancer, to help support them at that point, all the way through the end of life treatments. At some point, if treatments are determined not to be effective any longer, to help with their transition to comfort care and possible hospice care. So we're there throughout the journey, along with the whole cancer team, to kind of work as a support network, provide them with resources, any support that we can do and offer.
How has your work changed because of COVID-19?
Well, unfortunately, right after it hit back in March, I was having to work from home at that point, so I didn't have the opportunity to meet with patients in person. Did all the work phone-wise and virtually, so that was a big change. Really missed the opportunity to meet with the patients and have the chance to support them in person. Did the best we could and became a sounding board to them throughout the journey here. And I was home for about 3 months. And then when I came back to work in June, it was a real appreciation for the opportunity to meet with them in person once again, but doing it in a safe way and really being smart about how we interacted with them, addressing their concerns and their fears along the way, both to the patients and their loved ones.
How big of a difference is it to meet with someone over the phone than to be able to sit across from them and talk them through some of the things that they're experiencing?
It's a huge difference. I don't know that I can stress that enough, to have the opportunity to sit them and look in their eyes and see their facial expressions. There's so much that goes on in being able to try to understand what they're going through just with that face-to-face interaction, and to cry together, to laugh together, to just share the true extent of their feelings, and whether it be celebrating a good news that they may be getting, helping them through the tough times. And it's so important to have that chance to meet with them face-to-face. So we try the best we could by phone contacts, and certainly encourage them to share as much as they can as well. But there's nothing better than face-to-face contacts.
What common experiences or challenges or emotions are you seeing among cancer patients right now?
Okay. I think when someone's diagnosed with cancer to begin with, it really hits at the core of a sense of loss of control in their lives. You know, they often receive a cancer diagnosis greatly due to factors they have no control over, and they struggle with a feeling of loss of control. I think it's a human emotion that we all have. We want to have some predictability or some ability to control our lives. Dealing with COVID kind of brings that up again. There's so much unpredictability, like Dr. Erickson shared as well, that patients can really struggle with that, to feel like, what do I have control over in my life at all? So the hope is to try to regain or help identify what factors can they control in their lives, and set daily goals or try to come up with things that they can hope for in their lives, or what can they impact that's going to help reinstill a sense of faith and control and break through that social isolation that COVID is unfortunately created in our lives.
Right, because not only might you feel isolated because you have a cancer diagnosis and you can't control that, but now we're actually physically more isolated than even before COVID-19 was a problem for cancer patients. I mean, you just have fewer in-person supports in general.
Exactly. That's a huge part of our human nature, is we're social beings, and we have a need to be around other people or interact at some level. And COVID has affected our ability or prevented us from being able to have those interactions. If we're working, if we're attending church services, just our day-to-day interactions with other people, our hobbies or what we enjoy doing or what brings us meaning in life is so tied into our interactions with others. And the challenge is to be able to find ways to still connect with people. If we're not able to meet with them in person, who can we call on a daily basis, or what can we do to stay connected with people? And through my experience in working with cancer patients over the last 30 years, I've been privileged to really see the perseverance or the courage of people, both patients and their loved ones, being able to adapt to this in remarkable ways. And it's been a privilege to be able to help witness that and to really learn from each person's experiences and what they've really been able to do to rise above this.
Tom Beckers is an oncology social worker at St. Vincent Hospital Cancer Centers in Green Bay. And we're talking about staying mentally well and emotionally healthy while trying to go through cancer treatments during a pandemic. We're talking about how we can support the people that we love. And your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. How are you offering someone you care about support right now as they deal with cancer? Maybe you have cancer yourself and you have figured out some things that work or don't work for making sure that you feel like you've got things under control as much as possible. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org as we talk about emotional and mental health right now. Tom, chemo is already an isolating experience, and that means right now during the pandemic, patients have limited visitors or limited interaction with family, friends, and team. I mean, I remember going with a friend to her chemo treatment once and, you know, sitting there and just talking and trying to be a distraction. Then that's not always possible right now. How do you see that increased isolation affecting patients?
That's been a difficult situation for so many patients, that whether they're getting a diagnosis all alone or with one family member, the physician is trying to do the best they can to give the news of the diagnosis while staying 6 feet apart, while wearing a mask. So you're really limited, or you're missing so much opportunities to really connect at such a intimate level. Or and they remember those experiences the first time you got the diagnosis. What was that like? And if you're left with not having a family member or loved one with you, or maybe having one or two family members, the way we're limiting it really is such a huge, it's an unfortunate situation that is out of our control, or we're doing the best we can to try to help support our patients and their loved ones as best we can. But it's a challenge, and we do the best we can to really provide patients and their loved ones that support, to say, hey, we're not alone. We're going to do the best we can as a team to rally around you and provide that much-needed support. And they have a right to expect that, and we have a responsibility to provide that level of support.
One of our former talk show producers was diagnosed with metastatic cancer at the start of this pandemic. She's received her first 6 inpatient treatments already, but alone, apart from the medical team. And she says that what's already an isolating experience is making her feel lonelier than she's ever been. Beyond the medical team, how are we as people to support someone going through this? Where do we start?
I think starting and giving people permission to feel what they're feeling, and help them be able to know that they have a right to whatever feelings they're experiencing. Validating anger and frustration, fear, a whole host of emotions that they may be experiencing. And so often if people aren't given that opportunity to experience their emotions, and people are telling them, don't feel that way, or you don't have a right to feel a certain way, that certainly can exacerbate the isolation and really complicate their mental health concerns and their feelings of depression, anxiety, any number of other mental health concerns. So I think starting with giving people permission to share what they're feeling, and in a non-threatening and a real supportive, caring way, and help them identify who are their other loved ones or support network that they can feel comfortable with trusting and reaching out to, whether it be other members of the healthcare team, their church folks, their other family, neighbors, whoever it might be.
What language can we use for that? Because certainly if someone says, I'm feeling really lonely, saying, don't feel that way, you're not alone, that invalidates it. But we do want them to know that we're here for them. How can we say that to them in a way that doesn't undermine their reality?
I think helping them, if there's an example of a situation where they may have felt lonely, please tell me more about a situation you were in when you felt lonely, or what does that feel like when you start feeling lonely, or help bring out additional situations that they may be in, or helping maybe a situation you may have had yourself where you may have felt lonely, to kind of break down some of the isolations where they can maybe feel like you can identify with what they're feeling also. Maybe not that at that same level, but at least start to help identify with them. So maybe if they have someone else that they've shared that information with as well, what was that like sharing it too? So see if there's other avenues to be able to help them feel comfortable sharing that experience or that feeling.
Yeah, we're talking with Thomas Beckers, who's an oncology social worker in Green Bay, talking about mental health for patients and families dealing with cancer during COVID-19. There's still time for your story at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. Our conversation here on The Morning Show continues. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Hospitals are restricting visitors, trying to protect vulnerable patients from COVID-19. And those necessary protocols, they come with costs. One of those is that cancer patients may have to go through treatment with fewer people literally by their sides. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Oncology social worker Tom Beckers is talking with us about the very real emotional burden of treating cancer, living with cancer during a pandemic. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Nancy in Grafton is on the line and wants to share with us. Hi, Nancy.
Well, hello. I have a neighbor who had cancer, and she had been in the hospital, and she came back home, and I was her caregiver. And then finally, the last few days, they had asked if they hospice came in. But she did not want to go to a facility. She wanted to stay in her own bed. And so she got plenty of medication to take care of that terrible pain she was with. And she had a large family, and they were so wonderful. They were such a wonderful bunch of people. And another thing is her daughter-in-law also had cancer. And just a few days prior to my neighbor's death, the daughter-in-law died. And so they held off with the funeral, and then my neighbor died too. And both the funerals were held at the same time here at church. And that family, so loving, so caring. And their mother had just showed the strength to that family, and they did to everybody else. And I was so blessed to be asked to be a caregiver for her.
Nancy, thank you for sharing that story. I'm so sorry for your loss. We know that sometimes that happens and that doesn't make it any easier. So I really appreciate your willingness to share that experience with us. And Tom, Nancy's story brings up the issue of grief and how grief can weigh even heavier when we're not able to gather in a way that we normally would.
You're very right. And thank you also, Nancy, for your support to your neighbor and your testimony to caring for her. You're right. COVID has certainly impacted so many ways of how we deal with grief and loss. And when someone's at the end of their life and where you'd like to believe family and friends can come around to be limited in the way they are, it can really cause some potential long-term complications. And I was glad to hear that hospice was involved with your neighbor, and hopefully they can provide some ongoing bereavement support over the next several months or year or so, like many hospices do. So yes, it can certainly impact how one grieves at the end of life. So good to know that they got good family support, and especially when there's two deaths in such a short time, that can be extra difficult. So, but nice to know that they've got a good family.
And that expert hospice support is important. Also, support groups play a role for cancer patients. You facilitate a monthly cancer support group. How has that changed because of an infectious disease?
Right. I've had the privilege of running support groups for probably about 15 to 20 years of my career, and mostly with cancer patients. It's certainly been a privilege to be able to see them, the patients and their loved ones, adapt in so many ways. And we've had our group change from in-person to a virtual Zoom group over the last 4 months, and it's been a big change. People miss the opportunity to meet in person, where it's been so much more connected in person, but we feel we're doing the best we can, providing the opportunity. Thank God for technology. We're fortunate to have the opportunity to offer this. We're not sure when we'll be coming back in person, or at that point it may be a combined in-person Zoom group, but it's been an opportunity to, again, allow patients and their loved ones to be a part of the group. It's open to any diagnosis. Family members, loved ones are able to join us. We have patients that are newly diagnosed, to people who are many, many years out after diagnosis. And the beauty of it is, regardless of what your situation is, what cancer journey you're walking, what we try to do is find out what you have in common. And we've talked quite a bit about COVID and the impact of that in the group and the challenges associated with that. But in the midst of that, in the end of the day, at the end of the group, recognize what we have in common, to realize we're not alone and we're walking the journey together. So my wife's an 11-year cancer survivor, and she also has been quite an inspiration. And so I've kind of got the personal experience there as well, and to be able to understand what both the patients and their loved ones are going through. So it's been a real privilege to offer that support to patients and their loved ones.
So good to hear your wife as well. Tom Becker is an oncology social worker at the St. Vincent Hospital Cancer Centers in Green Bay. And we're talking about mental and emotional health while going through cancer treatments, especially right now. And Anne from Madison is ready to join our conversation. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. So last August, at age 62, I was diagnosed with breast cancer and was scheduled for surgery in October. And so I had about 6 weeks to decide what kind of surgery, because I did have a choice. I was going to have lumpectomy or mastectomy. So during that period, I watched probably hundreds of YouTube videos done by professionals, but more importantly by survivors, women who have had all different kinds of breast cancer and all different kinds of surgeries and treatments. And by the end of that time, I had watched so much of these videos that I was just over it. I was just like, it was like, no, it helped normalize it for me in my mind, for one thing. And it let me know that there are hundreds and thousands of women who have survived them. And so I also knew about radiation treatment and chemotherapy treatment, which I did not have to have. I turned out I didn't have to have either. But the other thing was at the Dean Clinic, they have a breast cancer nurse navigator who's very knowledgeable about breast cancer and was at my disposal all the time. The third thing was a group called ABCD, which stands for After Breast Cancer Diagnosis. And this is a group of around 500 women who have had breast cancer, and they match you with someone your age that has the grade cancer you have, the stage cancer you have, your weight, you know, all the different things. They match you with someone, and that person is like a mentor. All these women have been trained, and she's your mentor, and she's on call too, you know, like 24/7. So I think that maybe in particular for breast cancer, there is a huge amount of support out there. And
thank you so much for sharing that with us. I don't mean to step on you here, but I do want Tom Beckers to be able to respond because you've given us so much information about, you know, accessing YouTube videos of survivors to working with staff. Tom, what do you hear as Anne in Madison shares her story with us?
Yes, thank you, Anne, for your testimony. I think it's so important. You've taken so much opportunity to control aspects of your situation by learning as much as you can, and that's very important. Certainly be cautious as to how much information because it can become very overwhelming if you dive into this full force. Thankfully or cautiously, there's so much information out there, so certainly utilize your primary healthcare team as your main resource, but you've utilized other avenues as well, and I agree, the resources such as the ABCD group is huge and such a great resource. And part of my role as a social worker is to educate people and inform them as to what resources are out there and taking advantage of what is out there for support, and whether it be one-on-one peer support or groups or whatever is available to you in your area. So I think it's wonderful you've taken the opportunity and have really kind of armored yourself with resources that you found helpful. So quite a great testimony to the importance of finding support for yourself and your family.
Yeah, congratulations, Anne, on getting the information and making the decision that was best for you with your diagnosis. We just have a few moments left, Tom, but I do wonder, how connected do you see someone's mental health with the ability to fight cancer physically?
There's been clear studies that have shown the connection between mental health and one's ability to rise above or to fight through cancer situations. So I think our own self-awareness of what our strategies are or what our struggles are can be so important. That's maybe the first step in being able to help us know what are coping strategies we can do to help through this, whether it be formal counseling, whether it be medications, working through your family doctor, if it's your oncologist, psychiatry, any number of resources. So recognizing who is your support network and what is it that's going to help you get up every day and make the best of that day.
Tom, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thank you, Keely, for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Tom Beckers is a Green Bay oncology social worker, and we've spent the hour talking about cancer in a pandemic. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.